Hey everyone, this is Dave Cabin. You can follow me on Twitter at DaveCabinFF. I'm alongside my co-host Hassan Rahim, who you can find on Twitter at HRR5010. And you're listening to the RotoViz Season Review. Today we will be discussing the AFC East and looking at the good, the bad, and the ugly of what happened in the division in 2017. For those of you who don't know, RotoViz is a sports data and analytics site that publishes over 1,000 articles per year and has a suite of more than 20 proprietary apps. Go to rotoviz.com to check out the site. Hassan, what's going on, my friend?
Hey, Dave. Hard to believe we're here. Super Bowl week is upon us, and the season is officially over.
It is crazy. We had some exceptional games in the playoffs, and it really is hard to believe that we are heading into that final game of the season, which makes it appropriate that we're talking about the AFC East, because obviously you have to mention the New England Patriots if you're talking about the AFC East, and they will be playing in that Super Bowl. Before we head in, give me your quick take on this Super Bowl matchup.
Man, it's actually a little tough for me. I was initially leaning, just Patriots are going to blow the, just smash the Eagles. But the more I think about it, this Eagles defense is really, really good. You know, their line play has been really good. And Nick Foles kind of decimating a fantastic Vikings defense gives me a little bit of pause here. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just want to mention something first on Nick Foles that's interesting. If you go back and you look at when Foles was at Arizona, that team lost a lot of games, but Nick Foles was ridiculous in college. He would put up like 5 touchdowns in games that they would lose and stuff, which is crazy. If you go back and you look at Nick Foles' college career, it was very interesting to see how that shook out. And I've actually always kind of thought that he was a pretty decent quarterback. I think he had some unfortunate situations that he was placed into, but I do think that he's good enough with this defense that the Eagles do have, that this team can definitely challenge the Patriots. I would say, you have to favor the Patriots given history, given the coaching staff that they have, Belichick and Brady, and everything that goes with the Patriots. But I do think, at the very least, this is going to be a closely contested game. I think it's probably going to come down to a couple of key drives in the fourth quarter, as we've seen in a lot of these Super Bowls recently. And I do think that the Eagles will be able to challenge the Patriots on both sides of the ball. But I would have to say, if they play this game out 10 times, I probably like the Patriots at like 6.5.
Yeah, and I'm kind of with you. I mean, Gronk is seemingly questionable. I think he keeps saying he's going to play. He probably has to pass a protocol. He's probably going to play, and he's the guy who, I don't know if there's anyone who can really defend him. He's just like that kind of like game-breaking talent. But I wonder if like Hogan's had enough time to get healthy and get back in sync. And there's a bunch of, all these like weapons that the Patriots have. And like you said, I think if you play this game out 10 times, I would take the Patriots in about, Patriots win, 6.5?
Yeah.
Of them, like you said.
Yeah, well, that, it's going to be interesting to see which guy it is that steps up in this game for the Patriots. We've seen this time in and time again, that somebody emerges as the key contributor in the game. And it's really hard to pinpoint who that is, which is one of those things that we'll probably talk about. But I think that there's a number of interesting stories going on with the Patriots. Obviously, there's the talk of some tension at the top with Kraft and Brady and Belichick, some tension, a bit of a power struggle. And a lot of that has to do with Jimmy Garoppolo, or at least it was perceived that way. But as we're learning more, it does appear that, there certainly were tensions, and it definitely could have had to do with Garoppolo. So what do you think we expect from Brady in 2018? Do you think we're still looking at a lot more seasons from him? And kind of, what's your take on how that impacts the quarterback situation for the team?
I don't know, how many years Brady has. He keeps saying he wants to play till what, he's 45?
Yeah, he has said that. And it seems like he's very gung-ho about doing so.
Yeah, but even then, I think we've got at least maybe another, 2 seasons, 2 really good seasons out of this guy yet to come. I mean, he's just one of the best quarterbacks in history. Just one of the GOATs. I mean, realistically, we should sort of admire what we're seeing when we watch Brady play. He's just so, so good. And I don't know if he will lose a step next season. I kind of doubt it because, this offense is under contract for all of next season. So he's going to return. Most of these guys will return, at least his receiving core. He's just a monster with Gronk. I do wonder if the Patriots draft a quarterback in this in 2018. There is a fairly deep quarterback class, and I wonder if they're looking to take a pick way back at the back of the first there. What do you think?
Well, I should say, in the interest of full disclosure here, I am from New Hampshire, so I'm a Patriots fan. So I'm not sure if that gives me better analysis sometimes or worse analysis. It's hard for me to kind of remove a lot of the subjectivity that I would have. But I will say I expect at the very least 2 to 3 more seasons from Brady. I think definitely 2 solid seasons. Just watching him season in and season out, I actually feel like if you go back maybe 2 or 3 seasons, it actually feels like he has a little bit more life in him. And he's been faring just superbly well in every situation he's been put in. So I'm expecting that from Brady. And I just want to make one point too, when you talk about him being the GOAT and how good he is. If you go back and you look at every Super Bowl that Brady's been in, he has done everything that the team has asked of him. So in those 2 losses to the Giants, he mounted what certainly at the time looked like game-winning drives, which is just absolutely insane. So I think if you look at the big games that he's been in so many times, even when the team loses, he has done everything that he could possibly do. You know, I think back to one of those games against the Giants and the defense and Seau and Brewski. They were celebrating on the sidelines and whatnot, and then they unfortunately went out and we had some of those crazy catches. So that's my little diatribe on that. But I do think that the Patriots will be eyeing a quarterback. I don't think they're going to go for them early. They'll try to find a guy that they like that they can scoop up later in the draft. But I am expecting them to start to kind of shift through some of those younger guys to find somebody that they can focus on to have come in when Brady does eventually leave the team, which there could still be 2 to 3, maybe even 5 seasons, which seems very doubtful. You know, I think they have to start planning for the future again. So keeping in mind, you know, as I talked about all these things that Brady did in the Super Bowl, if you think about last season, we saw James White really emerge as a hero. And at points in this season, as we always see with the Patriots, and something we talked about going into the season, it's really hard to know on a week-to-week basis who the guy is going to be. We've seen it be James White sometimes, but we also saw the other backs kind of emerge. They have the ability to cut Mike Gillisley for a $0 hit to their cap, and they have Burkhead and Lewis no longer under contract, so it's really just White. What do you think this team does next year?
So that's actually kind of interesting, because James White, as you mentioned, is signed to a longer term deal than any other RB on this roster, and I'm actually kind of fascinated to see kind of how they approach it, because Brady's been ridiculously good at targeting these very versatile backs like Lewis, Burkhead, James White, all have this freakishly talented ability at catching the ball out of the backfield. White, for example, accounted for 14% of the target share, put up 130.3 PPR points. He was targeted 71 times and he caught 5 of those. Burkhead, you know, was used a little bit more as in the run game, but he saw 36 targets and he caught 30 of those. You know, he scored 3 TDs as well. He accounted for 10% of the target share. Deion Lewis sort of came on a little late. He didn't account for much of the receiving game in the receiving game, but he really has been a fantastic through the tackles kind of runner, really showing what he is capable of. And I think he's going to get a fairly hefty contract as a free agent this season. In 2017, this is his first season, according to the RotoViz screener, where he's rushed for about 180 attempts. You know, that's more than he rushed for. More than he rushed for in 2016 and 2015 combined. He's flirted with about, you know, 900 rushing yards, and he scored 6 rushing touchdowns. I think he's going to get paid, and he's probably going to leave in the offseason. Rex Burkhead, I wonder if they bring him back. And if so, they still do kind of need one more back, maybe a slightly bigger bruising back. So I'm not too sure if they go out on the free agent market to find one of those guys. It's also possible like they could bring in maybe Isaiah Crowell on a fairly cheap deal and use him as an early down to 2-down grinder. What are your thoughts on that one?
The Crowell mention is pretty interesting. My take on this would be, I actually think that ideally they'd like to probably get back that same group of guys that they had. I'm not so certain though that it really matters what type of archetype they have with the guys that they bring in. I think even if they were to have three similar backs, and I think that the team does like to have that kind of trio of backs that they can use. I think they'll find a role for all of them, and they kind of like guys that, you know, it's kind of ambiguous as to how they could be used. You know, so like you mentioned, guys that can just do a lot of things. They can catch, they can run between the tackles if you ask them. So ultimately, I think if push came to shove, they'd probably prefer to keep Lewis over Burkhead, but with the way the Patriots operate, it's going to come down to dollars and cents so much that it's really hard to anticipate. But I actually will say that I think this is going to be one of those situations where they're going to prefer to try to keep the guys around as opposed to hitting the free agent market for them.
Yeah, and just thinking about those like two down grinders, a couple of names that I would find personally kind of amusing if they went would be Jeremy Hill or a Brandon Oliver type, like someone just to bring in on that vet minimum, prove it, 1 year deal, just kind of like, you know, a through the tackles kind of guy. Like, I don't know if they'll be fantasy relevant unless they're going to be used as a red zone back, but just for my own personal amusement, I think that those two guys would be kind of fascinating to be signed and see how the Twitter community flips on their idea of someone like Jeremy Hill, especially.
I mean, I think that both of those guys and any back like that really could be successful, and they'll have a couple of fantasy relevant games. I think the way that we saw Gillislee do it, you know, I think there's a lot of guys that could fit into that role, but it does really seem like they do prefer even down in short yardage to try to find, you know, other ways to get these guys involved. So I don't think that if they bring in a free agent like that, they'll be particularly fantasy relevant. But that guy could definitely be successful in spots here and there. Now, one player that it's hard to gauge the success of his season is Brandon Cooks. And I was very anti-Cooks in the preseason. I took a lot of heat on Twitter with a couple of people that I was talking with because I said that I felt like Cooks was the most overdrafted player that I had seen in some years, mainly because if you look at that offense, even the most targeted players in the receiving core for the Patriots, we're not getting over 125 targets. And it looked like a guy like Cooks would need 140 targets to be a top 10 wide receiver, like people were talking about him. And at the time I said, it's going to take either an Edelman or Gronk injury very early on, or the two of them to go down in the middle of the season. Well, what happens? Edelman goes down before the season even starts, yet we still only see Cooks finishes, I think in PPR, was like wide receiver 17 with closer to 120 targets. So what do you make of the season? Do you think it was a success for Cooks, or do you think that he did not live up to the expectations?
So, I mean, so when you're looking at Cooks' history, it certainly wasn't as good as his 2015 or 2016 with Drew Brees under center. Actually, as an aside, how crazy is it that Brandon Cooks has only had the ball thrown to him by either Drew Brees or Tom Brady? Like, that's a pretty charmed life. But Cooks actually had his least yardage since his rookie year. I mean, he still cracked 1,000 yards. But like you said, he saw about 120 targets. He saw 19% of the target share. You know, he was clearly this entire like passing offense runs through Gronk, who accounted for 23% of the target share. But even without Edelman present and Chris Hogan missing massive stretches of time and to where, you know, we were seeing Danny Amendola playing very, very meaningful snaps in high leverage games. You know, Cooks kind of had a bit of a disappointment since he should have really run away with the opportunity. That being said, you know, there are certain plays that you can just sort of go back and watch, and Brady either overthrows or underthrows Cooks, and maybe that's like production that we're just not seeing. Because at the same time, like Cooks accounted for almost 1,800 air yards. And assuming that he's back next season and Brady's just as good as he used to be, maybe they spend some more time this offseason, work on that timing, and he gets, you know, hit in stride. For fantasy football, I think for Cooks, it comes down to where his ADP shakes out. I don't know if he's going to go, you know, in the early to mid two as he was around the end of the season. But it'd be really interesting to see if they can work that chemistry stuff out.
Yeah, I agree. I think one of the things that happened too was, and we've seen this before, it's not always as much of a plug and play with a receiver moving in, even if he's coming from a very prolific offense into an offense that's equally prolific. You know, it doesn't always work out that it's a seamless transition. So I think there's certainly some credence to that. But you got to remember too, you know, like you said, Edelman's coming back. There's Malcolm Mitchell, who was out with injury. Then there's other guys like Chris Hogan. You know, I'm interested to know where you think he's going to fall in drafts. And then with guys like Danny Amendola hitting free agency, does that maybe work up some room for them? And what might they do to kind of address him leaving? Or is he a Patriot next season?
I think that kind of comes down to cap and what kind of, you know, contract he's willing to take. In assuming Edelman and Mitchell are both healthy, I think that kind of like renders Amendola more so as a bench guy, kind of a luxury asset to this team, just because it feels like Amendola has been playing that the poor man Julian Edelman role. And Chris Hogan, I have no idea where his ADP shakes out. He's definitely someone who I'm very, very interested in. You know, he was one of their most heavily targeted receivers in the red zone. He has a lower ADOT than Brandon Cooks. He saw about 70% of the target share, although he missed a significant chunk of games. It seems that Brady looks more comfortable when he's throwing his way. So it'll be interesting to see him eat into some of those targets. Just that free target share for Hogan would be pretty interesting. The guys who I'm interested in are Edelman and Malcolm Mitchell, because they're both coming off those injuries. Both those guys are kind of fascinating to me, just in terms of where they shake out. I don't know if fantasy players will forget that what they do or what Mitchell's rookie season looked like. You know what I mean? Like, I'm hoping we can get those guys at a depressed ADP.
My take on this is I think that every receiver on the Patriots is going to be overdrafted. To a degree, some of that might depend on what happens in the game on Sunday, but I feel like everyone's going to be overdrafted. And I say that just because when you bring some of these guys back in, inherently, that's going to bring down the opportunity for all of these players. And I think that beyond that, what will happen is one of them will emerge early on in the season and we'll all be kicking ourselves, or we'll be congratulating ourselves for taking them, but it will all kind of even out. So I would say I'm not going to be going out early in drafts, or as early as ADP is going to dictate for these guys. So very quickly, because we've talked at length about the Patriots, which I think is probably fair, and you know they probably deserve, especially given how the other teams performed in this division, they deserve a lot of airtime. But as far as Gronk goes, are you concerned about the injuries? He still missed 3 games this season. He was healthy for the most part, though. But where do you see him drafted next season, and do you have any concerns?
I'm fine getting back on the Gronk horse. I mean, sure, he missed games, but you kind of know what you're getting with Gronk when you go into it. He saw 22 of the red zone targets, and he caught 11 of those, and he put up 6 TDs. He's by far, he saw more red zone targets than Cooks or Hogan or James White, you know, who accounted for 12, 12, and 11 respectively. You know, and the one thing about drafting Gronkowski early, or at least reaching for him because of the tight end thing, is you're drafting a massive positional edge ahead of your most of your league mates. Now, it depends on ADP or where he's valued. Again, I'm hoping that people are still worried about the injuries to where you can take him in the late second, where that gives you a massive edge. Again, realistically, if you want one of the receivers, if you're not willing to pay up for Gronk, maybe just try and nibble on some of the cheaper guys vis-a-vis ADP. What are your thoughts on that one?
I mean, I've always been anti-drafting Gronk. I think if he's there in the third round, which he won't be, I think he's probably going to shake out in the second round ADP. I would go for him in the third, but I just don't see it in the second, just because I do have concerns, and it does seem like a foregone conclusion at this point. He's going to miss a couple games this season, and I kind of like to structure my teams in a way where I'm not trying to gain a perceived advantage at a position where I only have one player, because if something does break wrong with Gronk, then I spent a pick purely trying to gain a positional advantage, but it can evaporate so easily. And we could probably talk ad nauseum about the logic behind that and the actual merits of that argument, but I think we should probably move it along to a team that fascinated me just because of the reluctance to accept the fact that Tyrod Taylor is not the problem in Buffalo. I think he was playing a very dismal cast of characters around him, especially in the receiving game. And I don't think he's a top 10 quarterback or anything at that stretch of the imagination. But I do think that, you know, he was serviceable enough for them. And them benching him to bring in Nathan Peterman was absolutely insane. I would say I don't think he's going to be back in Buffalo under center next season. But if not, who do you think that they turn to?
Well, I mean, Tyrod kind of did the best that he could with what he was given. When you're looking at the how the targets were split out on this squad, LeSean McCoy was the most targeted receiver in this, whatever they wanted to call their receiving core. You know, so you're already hamstrung the guy. Nathan Peterman, like that entire fiasco, honestly, in my opinion, the way they went about it, just looking for an excuse to get rid of Tyrod, they should have not made the playoffs. I'm really happy for Bills fans that they did, because it really is awesome watching those guys have their moment in the playoffs. But I really did not want this front office and this coaching staff to be rewarded for them making these negative EV moves with their own roster. You know, you kind of got to dance with the guys that brought you here. And the fact that you're in playoff contention with, you know, guys like Charles Clay and Zay Jones and Deontay Thompson as your major receiving threats says a little bit more about Tyrod than it does about this coaching
Absolutely.
Staff.
Absolutely.
I mean, again, you know, like he's doing the best he can with this like motley crew of receivers. And so I hope to see Tyrod maybe no longer in Buffalo. And if they do decide to move on from Tyrod and realize that Nathan Peterman's not the guy, I wonder if they're going to try and throw as much cash as possible at Kirk Cousins, because that sweepstakes has begun. And then I wonder which of the castaway Vikings QBs, whether it's Case Keenum or Sam Bradford or Teddy Bridgewater, they try and snag.
Yep.
What do you think?
I think that it's probably going to be a lower level guy, maybe like one of those Vikings quarterbacks, because I don't see them being perceived by the competitive quarterbacks that are going to be out there like Cousins as being that good of a destination. Just when you look at the pieces that are going to be around them, that's going to be enough to scare off any quarterback. And it just doesn't really feel to me like a situation where the Bills themselves are really going to be committed to winning and getting better, just because they're still staring down the Brady Patriots monster for a couple more seasons. So I'd be surprised, really, if they get anybody of note or anybody exciting. And even if they do, I mean, this team is still going to be doomed until they can make some other adjustments and get some receivers for that quarterback. So LeSean McCoy is one of the only highlights that they really have. I mean, he's 30 years old now. Do you think that he can still keep it going in this offense?
They're kind of going to need him to, right? I mean, he scored just 6 rushing touchdowns this year, you know, a year removed from his 13 touchdown season last year. And it's really weird because, you know, Mike Gillisley left in free agency, who was his big vulture. I mean, they still had Tolbert out there trying to vulturing TDs, but that's not the real thing about McCoy. Like, what really is impressive about McCoy is just how often and how healthy his usage is in that passing game. Like I mentioned, he was targeted 77 times. He was ostensibly the wide receiver one. And just the fact that, you know, they've got this this guy who has got a very high floor. You know, he saw 16% of the targets in 2017. I'm sure that the Bills are going to keep leaning on him till the wheels fall off. The question about McCoy will be, where does his ADP, again, where does it shake out? Because I don't know if he's certainly going to see the usage, but does he have that kind of ceiling to get you one of those Todd Gurley 45-point games? And I don't know if he has that. And I don't know how you value that in drafts in this upcoming, you know, for 2018 and beyond. What are your thoughts?
I think he certainly doesn't have a ceiling that comes anywhere near a player like Gurley or some of these similar backs this season. I mean, I think he's going to be successful, but it is a situation that does give a lot of skepticism, given some of these younger, strong options that we're going to see at running back. So, I mean, I think he's a guy that if he manages to fall down and, you know, is going in that RB maybe 8 to 12 range, then he might be a guy that I'm looking at. But I do think you're going to have to expect him to be slowed down a little bit. It would be nice if we could see some other players emerge. Now, Jordan Matthews is going to be a free agent, but they did make the trade for Kelvin Benjamin. They have Zay Jones, who, as you wrote in the notes, had ostensibly the worst season as a rookie wide receiver. What do they do here to try to put some other pieces around? Are there moves that they can make for that receiving core?
So just to touch on Zay Jones quickly, he was definitely the least efficient rookie in the last decade among rookies who saw 50 or more targets. But you know, at the end of the season, it was revealed he was playing through a torn labrum. I don't know if I have him in Dynasty, I don't know if I'm looking to get out from under him. I'm kind of willing to hold, because if you're playing through a torn labrum, it's a little bit difficult to move your arm around and catch the ball, which I believe a wide receiver is supposed to do. So, you know, I'm willing to accept that, like, the labrum was what kind of weighed him down. I mean, they drafted him fairly highly, so he's going to see plenty of opportunity next season. The guy I'm kind of impressed with is Kelvin Benjamin, who played through a knee injury for almost the entirety of his 6 games as a Bill. I mean, you know, sure, he was playing through this massive knee injury, and we're dealing with this question of whether or not he'll ever be healthy again 100%, but kudos to the guy for gutting through the pain. You know, he's just really, really impressive, and I'm kind of hoping that Benjamin's able to get healthy. I don't know if I could draft him next season because of those lingering knee issues. J-Matt's actually kind of interesting because he's that possession kind of guy who also has injury concerns, and he may just never really live up to his potential that we saw early in his season because of just the injuries that he's been playing through. But if he's able to get healthy and he's able to come back to the Bills or go somewhere else, he's easily going to be one of their like top slot / possession guys and one of those PPR machines. What do you think?
You know, as I'm hearing you talk about this, it makes me realize that I might have been a little too pessimistic and too hard on this team. I think there certainly were a lot of injury challenges that this team faced that kind of depressed, you know, the ability of this team to produce. I'm with you. I think that if J-Matt can recover, I think, you know, he's a player that has a solid future as, you know, a mid-level kind of wide receiver who can do some things. And I would like to see Kelvin Benjamin return. I actually like Charles Clay. I believe that I'm higher on him than you are, but I think that Benjamin and Clay could be an interesting combo out there. I got to admit, though, I actually don't know if Clay returns next season or not. Do you?
I believe he does. I think they have him under contract for next season. Charles Clay will certainly be one of those incredibly unsexy tight ends that you can leave your draft with right at the end. Think that like Charles Clay might be the guy who we want to target in this receiving game till we see how free agency and the draft shakes out.
I'm with you on that. I think, at least for me personally, in my fantasy season, he was kind of a high spot among a lot of mediocrity on that team. But I will tell you what is not mediocre, and that is a subscription to an NFL pass at RotoViz. Go to the RotoViz radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast. Get 30% off, a listener only discount to the site, and just get all of the great content and tools that we have coming up. We're going to be blasting all kinds of draft coverage, breaking down what happens on all of these teams, getting you ready for 2018, Dynasty, Redraft, Best Ball. We're going to have you covered on all of that. So make sure that you go to rotoviz.com. So Hassan, now that I kind of fumbled and stumbled through that little read there, it brings us to the Dolphins, who have been doing a good job of stumbling and fumbling for some years. They bring in Jay Cutler to replace Ryan Tannehill. We all know how that went. Just to remind everybody out there, obviously we said that the Bills made the playoffs. The Dolphins only won 6 games. They went 6-10. And the Jets, who we'll talk about later, went 5-11. So we have the Dolphins and the Jets at the bottom of the conference. Does anything change with Ryan Tannehill back under center next season?
Not really. I mean, this maybe the passing offense kind of improves. Gase has publicly kind of backed Tannehill, but there's rumors swirling about Baker Mayfield being them being interested in him. They Baker Mayfield reportedly met with the Buffalo Bills, the Miami Dolphins, the New York Jets, and the New Orleans Saints over Senior Bowl week. And it seems that like there's some chatter coming out of Miami that indicates that they're open to drafting a rookie with their 11th pick, assuming one of these one of the heralded QB prospects somehow falls all the way down to them. Maybe they take him. Otherwise, I can see Gase being true to his word and just sort of sticking with Ryan Tannehill, who, despite his best efforts of putting off surgery, unfortunately did tear his ACL, which is very, very, and I'm hoping he comes back at full strength. I don't know if he's going to be fantasy viable or this team will be, but I was wondering what your thoughts on that would be.
Yeah, I mean, I think regardless who the quarterback is, they're not going to be fantasy viable. And I think that it's going to make it hard for some of the players around them, but we'll probably still see the team's running back be useful in certain spots. And then, you know, we have to talk about what shakes out at receiver, but it could be, you know, an interesting group there. And even if it is Mayfield, I don't know what to make of Mayfield yet. I need to go in and do some more research. I'm, skeptimistic with him as I am with all quarterbacks, but it is going to be interesting to see, at least from a ground game perspective, what this team can do, because we did see some hot, some good spots from Kenyon Drake towards the end of the season. And, you know, do you think it's his backfield? We know that they traded Ajayi away and Damian Williams is going to hit free agency. Are they going to go for somebody else, or is this his backfield to run with?
No, think about like all the things that had to happen for Kenyon Drake to sort of really see that kind of opportunity he did towards the end of the season. They traded away Ajayi to Philadelphia. Damian Williams was hurt and then just couldn't get back on the field. And so Kenyon Drake sort of de facto fell into all that opportunity. I don't know if they go out and they might actually re-sign Damian Williams. And I don't know if they spend a high draft pick on running back. Maybe they'll take one super late or something. Or maybe they draft a couple from the free agency heap. But I really don't know if Kenyon Drake will be the guy, as we saw, although he had a fantastic end to the season with all that opportunity. He really delivered, just, and he showed that he was able to be used in all phases of the game as a true bell cow. I just don't know if they see him as such, because again, he climbed a massive mountain to get to where he was, and it took a whole bunch of injuries and trades to open up that opportunity for him. What do you think?
I'm with you that I think that they try to bring back Williams, and I'm not sure that it's going to be Drake's backfield if they don't. I think that they would have to go in and try to pick somebody else in free agency to couple with him, because he just doesn't seem to me like the type of player that could go the whole season just as their pure main source of the running game. But I think another thing that could really impact that is if Jarvis Landry doesn't re-sign. He's going to hit the free agent market. It's looking like they're not going to be able to sign him. And I think that could really impact the ground game and the receiving core. So what do you think becomes of players like Devontae Parker and Leonte Carew if the team cannot sign Landry? Do you think that has any implications in the running game?
First off, can we just say, like, Jarvis Landry is incredibly underappreciated. He's been a wide receiver of one.
Oh, yes, I'm with you. I love Landry. Seasons. I always think he's been underappreciated.
I mean, if you're playing in PPR leagues and you're not drafting Landry because you don't like how he's used, PPR might not be the format you're looking for. I mean, you know, yep. You know, this guy has a racer of 0.96. Sure, he's got a very low ADOT of 6.4, but he's just so good at converting those air yards into receiving yards. He wins everywhere across the field. He showed touchdown upside this season. You know, he saw 27% of the targets yep. in Miami. You know, if he leaves, like, that opens up a significant chunk of the target share for a lot of the other wide receivers. But I don't know if Tannehill is going to be the kind of guy to unlock how to deploy some of these guys. So you got, you know, Landry has an ADOT of 6.4, as I mentioned, but Devontae Parker has an ADOT of 12.6. Kenny Stills has one of 15. And it looks like they were deploying Leonte Carew at a shallower depth, 8.3, but that's only on 14 targets. So it's a bit of a smaller sample size.
Right.
But, you know, with Landry gone and you're opening up like 160 targets, I don't know if Tannehill is going to be the kind of guy who will consistently slug it down the field, because, again, it goes back to kind of how much play action will they run and stuff like that. My biggest concern here would be with Devontae Parker. We see, you know, we're waiting on the breakout that never seems to ever come. What do you think happens with Parker, whether Landry leaves, if Landry leaves?
I think even if Landry leaves, we see Parker become the wide receiver one on that team. I don't see him being wildly successful for a number of reasons. As you mentioned, it just seems like he's not able to get over that hump. We've been looking for this to happen for a couple of seasons now. I don't think the quarterback play is going to be there, and I don't think they're going to be a good enough of a team to really facilitate him taking that step to be the player that many of us have hoped that he would be, which I think is unfortunate for Parker, but it just kind of seems to be the reality of the situation. And then to round out our look at the options that they're going to have in the passing game, Julius Thomas probably going to be cut by the Dolphins. Is this a spot that sets up to just be a fantasy wasteland next season, or will they go and maybe sign one of these big free agents? I know Jimmy Graham's out there. I can't imagine he's a possibility, but do you think that that could be a hope for Dolphins fans?
Sure, why not? I mean, I personally am kind of curious to see what happens under center. I mean, maybe Ryan Tannehill isn't as bad as my mind's eye is making him out to be. There's Jimmy Graham would be an interesting one. Maybe they chase ASJ. So those are two of the bigger names available in free agency.
Yep.
But at the same time, I don't know how many fantasy viable receivers this offense will be able to support. I have to go back and look and see how they did under Tannehill.
It's going to be one. I mean, I think they can only support one. Just looking at the numbers, I mean, I'm just going to quickly go down the targets. You had 161 for Landry, 105 for Stills, 96 for Parker, and then not many else elsewhere. So like, even if you try to roll that up into another player, I don't see it really working out unless we can see somebody that's going to be extremely good or extremely efficient, which obviously they'd have to bring in a big name to replace Landry for that to happen.
The guy who I am genuinely interested in this offense would be Kenny Stills. They re-signed him to a large contract.
Yep.
He seems to always sort of produce when he's called upon. He certainly capped Parker's, share of the targets and upside. It just feels like he's a guy I always forget about, and then I forget to draft him, and he's always just a value whoever gets him.
Yeah, I'm with you on Stills. I actually like Stills, and he was a guy that my model kept picking here and there is a guy that could have some big games. So I think he's one of those players that actually, the more that I think about it, he could have a couple of big, nice games next season, especially if Landry isn't there. I don't know if he's the type of guy I would rely on week in and week out, which might be the problem with some of these players in Miami, but I do like Stills. And that brings us to the Jets, who, as I mentioned earlier, won just 5 games. Their offensive coordinator, John Borden, is going to be gone. Any hope for this offense?
First off, just hats off to John Morton. He took a roster that most considered to be a zero-win roster, and he won 5 games out of it. He seemed to get the best out of the limited talent pool that he had to work with. He got ostensibly Josh McCown's best season at the age of 38. With Quincy Enunwa out, he's coaxed a top 20 finish out of Robbie Anderson. ASJ became a viable tight end for a short stretch. But again, he had his own issues down in Tampa, and it's just really nice to see a man recover and sort of deal with his demons and kind of come back. And hopefully he's able to come back to New York and just be their tight end and just be the budding star that he's supposed to be in this league.
Right. Now, it's going to be interesting to see where the coaching staff will go once the draft arises, because we know that the Jets have the 6th overall pick. It would stand to reason they're probably going to go for a quarterback. Any inkling for you of who they might go for if they do decide to go with the quarterback in the draft?
Yeah, and that kind of depends on how the top 5 play out. Which means if Baker, if all these negative reports about Baker Mayfield are true and like how teams don't really value him truly, you could see, maybe Baker Mayfield falls to them. And it kind of comes down to what Denver does ahead of them, because the Jets are also rumored to be in on the ongoing Kirk Cousins sweepstakes. So, maybe they just throw a gobs of money at Kirk and then try and find other franchise guys at 6 instead of, assuming the other teams are out on him. And that's going to kind of be really fascinating to see. If they do go the rookie route, I wonder if they bring back Josh McCown as that veteran presence. So what do you think?
I would think that that's a definite possibility. I think that, as you mentioned, he had a very good season. I think that McCown in spots in his career has been strong. And for what they'd be looking for him to do, I think he could very aptly fill that role. So I think that there's a high possibility that they bring him back, especially if they're turning to a rookie quarterback. It just makes sense. Now, there's another veteran that the team's going to have to think about, and that's Matt Forte. They can move on and release him with only a $1 million hit to their cap. Obviously, they have Bilal Powell, Elijah McGuire. Do you think that they make that move and move on?
I think they might, just because Forte looked really good at spots and he was hampered by injury for the most part. You know, and so I wonder if they do just kind of decide to move on. I know they signed Jeremy Langford to their practice squad, and sure, we saw Jeremy Langford fade away into obscurity in Chicago.
Yep.
But at the same time, I wonder if they're fine with letting Matt Forte, just cutting him, eating that cap hit, and not having to worry about him, and then going with this RBBC of Powell and McGuire. It appears that they're not willing to trust Powell as a true bell cow back, although, you know, like he does every season, he just came on hot down the stretch.
Yep.
And so I wonder if the decision is kind of made for them regarding Forte and his inability to stay healthy, which is honestly really sad to see, because the guy was just one, at one point, he was just one of the top running backs to own in fantasy for a very long time.
Yeah, Forte had an unbelievable run. I don't think that there's much of an incentive for the team keeping him around, especially with the manner in which they can release him. Bilal Powell, boy, he was just a disappointment. He was a guy that we tried to get really up on as a site, thinking that he could manage to capitalize on a lot of opportunity. You know, with Forte struggling with some issues health-wise, there was times that Powell could have taken over. He just wasn't able to do it. For me, I think we're going to see more of a Powell-McGuire mix next season, and neither of them being particularly high finishers from a fantasy perspective. Now, Robbie Anderson, who you touched upon, we got to hope that he can pull together his life in the same way that ASJ did. He was an undrafted free agent, and he managed to play very, very well. But with this second arrest, it does give some concern. So, you know, do you think that it's going to impact him moving forward? Was this season a fluke? Is he the type of player that, you know, if he can manage to get a third chance, can really string together a good season?
I'm wondering if his season was just kind of like aided by the fact that Quincy Enunwa went down and there really wasn't a good secondary option in the receiving game alongside him, especially one who could be like deployed as a deep threat. You know, he saw 22% of the targets, almost cracked 941 yards, and he scored 7 TDs. I don't know if that's truly replicable, especially with, you know, Enunwa coming back. He's expected to play the slot. The guy who really fascinated me was the fact that Jermaine Kearse saw a lot of targets. He saw 20% of the target share, you know, and 100-plus targets. He scored 5 TDs. Fell about 200 yards short of that elusive 1K mark. He's deployed at a slightly lower depth. And so I wonder if just, even if he's back and avoid suspension, I don't know if there's going to be enough targets to go around for Robbie Anderson. He was a fantastic best ball pick around, you know, in towards like the last final round, the last five rounds of the draft. I don't know if what we saw out of him could be replicable. I've seen Josh Hermsmeyer on Twitter refer to him as 2018's Terrell Pryor. I think that's fairly apt.
So Hassan, that takes us through all of these teams. Any closing thoughts on this division before we close out?
Yeah, it kind of is crazy to me that we have on one end of the spectrum, you've got Tom Brady, one of the GOATs, and then on the other end, you've got three teams who have really labored with you know, substandard QB play. And so it'd be fascinating to see what those guys do. You know, three teams in this division seem to be all in the hunt for new quarterbacks, and that will dictate how their fantasies, like how fantasy viable their assets will be going into next season.
Well, Hassan, as always, it was awesome talking with you, and you know, I'll look forward to doing so in the future.
Absolutely, Dave. It was an absolute blast. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. As always, glad to have you. And that's going to do it for today's episode of the RotoViz AFC East Season Review. I'm Dave Cabin. You can find me on Twitter at DaveCabinFF. My co-host was Hassan Rahim, who you can find on Twitter at HRR5010. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank you for listening to the RotoViz Recap series. Please rate and review the RotoViz Radio podcast on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. Contact us via email, rotovizradio@gmail.com, and follow us on Twitter at RotoViz Radio. And remember, you can always support the pod by subscribing to RotoViz at a 30% discount through the RotoViz Radio homepage, rotoviz.com/podcast.